This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Seton, what if I told you there's a bacon, then there's number one thick cut, tastes like a touchdown in your mouth bacon?
You must be talking about Wright brand bacon, because they are not playing when it comes to the premium quality of their bacon.
It's thick cut, hand trimmed, and real wood smoke, real. And you can tell.
So why settle for average bacon when you can have the real stuff?
That's right. And if you're looking to upgrade any meal, try Wright brand bacon. That's called Wright brand bacon. You won't regret it.
Experience bacon the right way.
As you may have realized, I watch a lot of sports. That's why I like Prime Video. It has all my sports in one app, like the National Women's Soccer League, included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report Sports add-on, or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. Prime Video. It's all your favorite sports in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
It's hour two on this Tuesday. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. What went wrong with the Eagles? And is it fixable? Sal Palantonio will join us. He was at the game last night as the Buccaneers roughed up the Eagles 32-9. Baker Mayfield threw for over 300 yards and three touchdowns. Bills hold off the Steelers. Josh Allen runs for a touchdown, throws for three, and now they await the Kansas City Chiefs. Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be going to Detroit, and according to DraftKings, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are getting 6 points. Texans getting 9.5 against the Ravens. Packers getting 10 against the Niners. And the Chiefs, a road underdog, they're getting 2.5. But this will be the first road playoff game for Patrick Mahomes. 877-3DP Show. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle at DP Show. Peacock, our streaming partner, they're going to bring you basketball tonight at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. It'll be Indiana and Purdue. That'll be exclusively on Peacock. Poll question from hour one. We had a few of these as we wait for Sal Palantonio to join us. Seton, what's the poll question for hour two?
NFC East team that feels like it's in the worst shape. Your options were the Commanders, Cowboys, Eagles, Giants.
Right.
You want to take a guess?
Probably recency bias, and they said the Eagles.
The Eagles are in third place on the poll question.
What?
Yep.
You know what? The Commanders sound promising.
They're in second place. They're in the second worst shape.
Wait, are the Cowboys number one?
No, the Cowboys are fourth.
Okay, and they should be.
Yeah, no, the Giants people have at 36%. Okay. They're in the worst shape.
Okay.
I don't disagree with that. I think they're underratedly in terrible shape. People are underappreciating how terrible a shape they're in.
Yeah, because I don't know what's going to happen with Saquon.
Right.
I don't know what's going to happen with Danny Dimes. What about Tommy Cutlets? You know, my wife doesn't care anything about football, but being Italian, she goes, "Who's Tommy Cutlets?" I go, no, we're not doing that.
Who's Tom Cutlets?
I said, he's going to be running a restaurant around Giant Stadium in, 3 years. She goes, they call him the passing Paisan? I go, hon, we're not doing this. We're not going to be.
It's already over, man.
Yes, it is. Your 15 minutes of fame for him, it's over. Sal Palantonio, kind enough to join us. He is going to the Tampa airport to fly back, the ESPN national correspondent covering the NFL, and a Philly legend, Sal Pal, joining us on the program. Sal, thanks for joining us. What did you see in the last 2 months that led us to what happened last night?
Well, they don't have any answers for the quarterback. That's the bottom line, Dan. I mean, we can talk about the defense, but you invested $250 million in Jalen Hurts. And game after game after game, for the last four games, actually, defensive coordinators have been blitzing Jalen Hurts at a rate of 45, 50, 55. Last night, 59% Todd Bowles went after Jalen Hurts, and they don't have an answer for him. And this is the number one problem with the football team. If you cannot convert on third down on the road in a wild card game, They were 0 for forever last night on third down because Todd Bowles blitzed on every single third down. That, to me, is the number one problem. And, you know, Troy Aikman said it on the broadcast yesterday, last night. They don't take advantage of the middle of the field. Now, they didn't have A.J. Brown last night, but even when they had A.J. Brown in the lineup, it was a problem. So I think that that is the number one issue. And when you don't have confidence in your ability to convert in the face of blitzing in the NFL, this is a blitzing league now. It's all about getting the quarterback and getting him out of the game. We had 68 different starting quarterbacks because quarterbacks get hurt. Even in Detroit, we saw Stafford get hurt. We saw Jared Goff get hit. This is what the league is about right now, and they don't have answers. They're not providing the answers, and that's the job of the head coach. It's his offense and his hand-picked offensive coordinator, Brian Johnson.
Is it fixable?
It is fixable, without a doubt. It is fixable. They were okay with it prior to the extraordinary level of blitzes. So they have to get somebody in there who understands. Listen, the guy who invented getting the ball out quickly and being so good at it that he won multiple championships was Tom Brady. They understood that it's a blitzing league, so the ball's got to be hut-hut, get it out of your hands quickly, provide answers, option routes at the line of scrimmage for the quarterback. If you're going to go empty all of the time, if you're not going to be under center all of the time, you're not getting your back to the quarterback, the defense, you're in the shotgun, you have to provide answers, and that's what Josh McDaniels did for years for Tom Brady.
How safe is Nick Sirianni's job?
I don't think he's very safe. Lane Johnson, the leader of the team in many, many ways, all-pro right tackle, you know, he's going to the Hall of Fame. His quote was four words, Dan. No one is safe. This kind of epic and final collapse, no one is safe. And it's important to identify what the collapse was about.
Yeah.
And even Nick Sirianni alluded to it in his post-game presser. We got into a rut, and we couldn't stop the slide. Okay. So I'm not getting paid to stop the slide. You're not getting paid to stop the slide. Lane Johnson's not getting paid to do that. The head coach, that is his number one job description. If the team's going in one direction, I got to make sure I get it to go in the other direction. That's why they're paying me $5 million a year. And he couldn't do that. So I would say I agree with Lane Johnson. No one is safe. But you have to fix the offense and do it around Jalen Hurts. That's the number one thing. And you got to re-energize the locker room. I was literally one of the last reporters. I waited for every player to come out of that locker room. Dan, there was frustration, but I think looking at the players like Hassan Reddick, like Brandon Graham, and I think Graham will be back next year, still playing at a high level, Fletcher Cox, they believe they have the talent in that locker room to turn it around. Both Reddick and Graham said to me, and they said, we got to get after the quarterback, straight to the quarterback. No more fooling around. And I think that's an indication of the kind of philosophy that they want on defense because they see the rest of the league doing it. You don't want Hassan Reddick dropping into coverage. You want him going after the quarterback. That's what he gets paid to do.
You know, they had a stretch where, you know, they beat Dallas and they beat Miami and they beat the Chiefs. And then they had the 49ers loss. I don't think they ever recovered from that loss. What was that, 42-19 or something?
Something.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was a bad something. No, it was a bad. But, you know, you have to go back to what Sean McDermott did. Listen, if Josh Allen and Gabe Davis hook up in the end zone in overtime, you remember the pass.
Yeah.
Gabe Davis went to the pylon. And Josh Allen threw it to the post, which he was supposed to do. That was Gabe Davis' miscommunication. Everybody knows you teach the wide receiver down in the red zone. When you have a zero blitz situation, you teach the wide receiver to go to the empty part of the field in the middle of the field. He didn't go there. the ball was not, they didn't connect on the pass. If they connect on that pass, then, you know, the Eagles may not even make it to the playoffs. So they had problems even before that game when they beat Buffalo.
When the Eagles take the field next year, who's the head coach?
Yes. Yeah, that's a good question. So here's the thing. Let's look at the dynamics of it. You know, I'm not in the speculation business. I'm in the reporting business. So here's what I can tell you. If you're going to change the offensive coordinator, which I believe they're going to do, if you're going to change the defensive coordinator, which I believe they're going to do, okay, are you going to make those two changes? Are you going to have a head coach mm-hmm. who's in the fourth year of a five-year deal be the steward, the navigator of this rebuild? That's the question. Are you going to go forward with Nick Sirianni, or are you going to have somebody else come in completely? And there are guys out there. I mean, Belichick's still very much available. Mike Vrabel, very much available. You could do that, and you could definitely change the direction psychologically. And here's the other thing, Dan, and I can't overstate this. In Philly, the fans matter.
Yeah.
There's so much attention on what the fans say because the team pays attention to it. They are always focus grouping. They are always polling their season ticket holders. The fans, you have two very big sports talk radio stations. You have guys who are on those sports talk radio stations like Joe DiCamera, Anthony Gargano, others, you know, where the coach no longer has to support. Marcus Hayes, the great columnist of the Philly Daily News. You don't have his, when you don't have that kind of support in the zeitgeist, if you will, it's hard to really maintain the head coach that you have. And I think that that's the thing. And the other thing, too, is you got to realize, yes, Jeffrey Lurie was patient with Andy Reid, 14 years. But he quickly jettisoned Chip Kelly when things went sour. He got rid of Doug Peterson 2 years after winning the Super Bowl when things were not going right. So he's not in a patient mood these days when it comes to head coaches.
I'll leave you with this. Who had a more disappointing season, the Eagles or the Cowboys?
You know, I would say the Eagles did because they started 10-1 and they couldn't right the ship. I mean, it just kept going under. And that's, you know, I was in that locker room. It was rough. It was definitely rough. Now, I may be giving you that answer because I'm closer to the situation. If you call up Ed Werder and ask him the same question, he might say the Dallas Cowboys because, you know, but in both cases, here you have owners who have to make a decision about a head coach. And you have the greatest coach of all time as a free agent, and you only get one shot. You're only going to get one shot at Belichick, right? Belichick, here's the thing about Belichick. In my view, from what I'm hearing from people, Dan, and this is important, Belichick wants to do this in a dignified, quick way. Beat the record of Don Shula in a way quickly in a place where it's dignified. So I don't know if he can get a better spot than either Dallas or Philadelphia. You have the quarterback in place. You have veteran players who know how to win. It's a quick turnaround in both those spots where he can set the record of Don Shula's all-time win record, and he can do it quickly. And I think those are two spots where he could definitely go and accomplish the goals that he wants to accomplish.
Always great to talk to you. Thank you for the information. Safe travels back home.
DP, you're the best.
Sal Palantonio, ESPN national correspondent. And you know what? He said a very wise thing. He's not in the speculating business. He's in the reporting business. And I've always respected that with Sal. Because we do a lot of speculating, hypothetically, rumors I'm hearing, sources close to, okay, I'm fine with that. And what he was talking about with Bill Belichick is interesting. Go in, it's a team that's ready to win. Maybe you can do it. Maybe you can do it. Like, that's where Atlanta's, I thought they were a sleeping giant. And I found out they were just sleeping. You know, 8-9, 8-9, 8-9. You got to find your quarterback. Philadelphia, you got your quarterback. Dallas, you have your quarterback. Bill doesn't want to deal with those things. Bill would come in and be a fixer. He'd be like, all right, this is what we need to do. We're going to shore this up. We need to do this. We need to do that. Not go get somebody, because Bill doesn't do well with that. If you have the personnel in place, that's where I see Belichick coming in. And Dallas and Philly, if Philly's open and if Dallas is open, then all of a sudden, it's just you got the greatest coach in history coming in to troubleshoot. It's a tune-up, not an overhaul. Don't need a new engine, just spark plugs. We'll take a break. Hall of Famer Steve Young will join us, get his thoughts on everything that's transpired so far. Where would he place Bill Belichick? We'll take a break back after this, Dan Patrick Show.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler T.J. Houshmandzadeh and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, T.J. Houshmandzadeh, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
All right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces, like there was the hat, there was the shoe.
Oh, same.
There was the, I was always a battleship guy or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow, you know, I mean, even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like digging for treasure or a robot Pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
It is getting that time of the year. It's Miller time. You don't need a watch or a clock to tell you. It's Miller time. Weather gets a little bit warmer. All of a sudden, the beer gets a little colder.
It's beer cracking season.
Okay. I don't know if it says that on the calendar. It's a beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters the most. It's a light beer that tastes like beer. That's why I reach for a Miller Lite. And it's less filling. Only 96 calories. They've been doing this since 1975. They have perfected it. You know, that summer afternoon, we're coming into that time of the year, be like, oh, man.
Crack
you,
one?
Yes, or two. Don't look at your watch. Don't look at the clock. Don't look at the calendar. You know. Miller Lite, the great taste, less filling, tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Patrick, or you can pretty much find it anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories, fewer carbs than premium regular beer. Miller Lite.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise, set several generations after the last installment, in which apes are the dominant species. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike and embark on a journey that will redefine the planet. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Get to phone calls coming up. Reggie Bush will join us in an hour from now. Hall of Famer Steve Young joining us, the former ESPN NFL analyst and former Super Bowl MVP. I thought of you the other day. Well, I think of you a lot of days, but I thought of you watching Puka Nacua. And the reason I thought of you is because you played with Jerry Rice, and Jerry Rice had football speed. It, you know, it didn't translate to a 40-yard dash, but Jerry didn't get caught. Puka Nacua doesn't have, you know, 4 or 5 speed or whatever, but he has football speed. Can you tell me, like, what is the difference between a guy who just runs 40 and a 4.4 or a guy who runs 4.6 but still he doesn't get caught?
Yeah, and there's a lot of guys that put a helmet on and it messes up their, like, their athleticism. Like, they put the shoulder pads, the helmet, they got to put cleats on, they run around, and it's like they're not the athlete that they showed up, you know, in shorts. And most of the time, the uniform creates a little bit of havoc and slows you down a little bit. And some guys speed up or at least handle the weight and the restrictions, and they actually get fat. Jerry was that way, and I think Puka, you've hit it, something that I think is really cool, because Puka is somebody that you do not want to cover because he's strong, his hand, like he's gonna make you miss, and he's gonna run by you, and you wonder why, how, and it's called football speed. And people always talk about, well, what is that, you know? And I always talk about the force, you know, the Star Wars force, like something you can't really explain, but it's a talent that when you put the uniform on, you actually get faster. And Jerry was that way.
Yeah, I agree, and I just feel that way with Puka Nacua. All right, let me start with the games last night. What do you see when you see Josh Allen now as opposed to, let's say, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Well, I see a guy that I wish had a little bit more help. I see a guy that has to play Superman every week. And it's amazing that he's able to put the cape on over and over and over again. It's the nature of the game today, though. We've talked about it. You and I have talked about it many times. The game's changed because the rule changes and defenses can't launch anymore. There's more space. The game's more wide open. And so the game is now for a guy like Josh Allen. He is the prototype. Somebody who has a big arm, can run around, can run for a 52-yard touchdown and change the game in the biggest games of the year. So I wish that he could be somebody that had a little bit more help so he could just play quarterback and then put the cape on more, you know, periodically. But he's the kind of guy that's going to win Super Bowls. Super Bowls are going to be won by guys like that.
But I think he does have help, Steve. I think he has two good tight ends.
I agree. I'm with you. It's not like he's helpless. I just wish there's a little more running game, a little more ability to just come out of the huddle, run the play, you know, get the yards. And maybe that's about Josh a little bit. Maybe it's about him just saying, look, I'm going to be more regular, more of a manager. Just get the ball out of my hands, make the gains, you know, let the offense run and be efficient, and that'll make him even more explosive. So I hear you, and I probably shouldn't have said it as dramatically, but I think maybe it's tactics, and I would love him to be able to run the football a little bit more.
Who had a more disappointing season, the Cowboys or the Eagles?
It's painful to think of both. To watch the 10-1 Eagles just go completely disappear, and it was weird. Even last night, I watched before the game. I'm like, the Eagles they'll respond. And I've said this week after week, and it's like they're going to respond. They have to respond. And they come up last night, and just there's nothing to respond with. And you want, because what's wrong? And so that's unnerving if I were an Eagles fan. But the thing that, but they're not the winner. The Cowboys are the winner, or the loser, I guess, is that they continue to underperform at the key moments to their talent, and have done it for 20 years. And you know, it never ends. They never live up to or extend or expand on the talent they have. They always have a talented team, but they never live to it. And last week had to be the most painful thing that Jerry Jones has seen in 20 years.
Okay, but this is systemic. And the one constant has been Jerry Jones.
Dan, come on. I mean, there's a couple of fundamentals. You talk systemic. It's fundamental rootedness of what's wrong with the Cowboys, and that is that Jerry Jones runs the team, but he's not the coach. And I always said, if he's going to run the team, you got to be the coach. But he doesn't hire somebody who is empowered by Jerry to be independent, so that when you walk in the locker room and you want to talk to the players, you want to yell at the players, and you yell at the players, and the players go, well, I don't really care what you say because I only listen to Jerry. And that's the problem, is that the head coach for 20 years has not been empowered. And he's got to hire somebody who is clearly empowered. I mean, they talk about Bill Belichick right now. It's fun to talk about. I don't know if there's any chance of it. But a guy like that, that would be somebody who now has the power in the locker room and can get the players to play and to be and live up to the expectations and to their talent. Now, the other piece of it, though, is because it's America's team, everyone talks about it, that somehow you're a Cowboy, you're already famous. And because of that, they haven't earned it. I think what they should do is, like, you don't get the star. There's two stars on your helmet. You get one star when you win 10 games, and you get another star when you win a playoff game. And that's how you earn the chance to be a Cowboy, because otherwise you put the helmet on and everyone thinks they're famous and they get punched in the mouth and like, wait, we're great. What are you talking about? We're the Cowboys. And you see that over and over and over again. So those are the two rooted pieces that need to change, or else the Cowboys continue. And people can argue with me, oh, Steve, that's not true. Well, 20 years of it, 30 years of it, you have to start saying there's something systemic about it, and you've got to empower a coach, and you've got to take the stars off the helmet until they get earned.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, because there's a sense of entitlement, and you're right. You're
100%.
Yeah, you're a Cowboy, so you're actually saying you start the season with no stars on your helmet either side?
100%. Because it says it's just where they – that's the situation. It's not – I'm not – blame. There's no blame. It's just the truth. And so that you have to go – they have to go earn that ability to be a Cowboy, because otherwise it gets given too easily without having their – you know, it just – they think that they just show up and everyone goes, oh, they're the Cowboys. Like, you know, the problem is that the rest of the league doesn't care anymore. It doesn't seem to matter.
I want you to place Bill Belichick. Where would you put him?
Oh, it's a tough one, because he's just and you wonder if he needs the support of all, you know, can he bring a bunch of people with him, and then how long is he going to be there? Because you want it. Today's game's different. You look at the most innovative minds of the game today, and you're looking at Miami, you're looking at Kansas City, you're looking at San Francisco, L.A., the Vikings, the Packers, like the innovative minds are really the guys that are moving around, taking advantage of the space. And so Bill Belichick is an amazing coach, but in today's game, he's going to have to find that offensive coordinator, which he hasn't had for a number of years, who can be that innovative mind, because that's who's winning. That's how you win champs. Used to be, I'll make a ferocious defense and I'll carry a team to the Super Bowl. You can't do that anymore. It's an offensive game. It's a wide open, innovative game, and it's also run by that guy. There's maybe eight today, and if Jordan Love is now one of them out of nowhere, or C.J. Stroud is amazing. If those guys kind of are obviously emerging, then you've got 8 to 10 guys in the league that can go win a championship. You got 20 teams that literally are watching, Dan. They have no chance. They're just showing up, playing 6-17 games, and then waving goodbye. And so there's 8 to 10 teams that have a shot. And if you're going to place Bill Belichick, you have to place him in one of those teams with one of those guys with an offensive coordinator who's innovative. And so, really, to me, that's more important than the actual geography.
Would you replace him in Dallas? Would you put him in there for Mike McCarthy?
Well, look, you and I would both agree that systemically that would be a positive, right? That nobody would wonder if Jerry Jones or Bill Belichick's in control. And I think that's important. Whoever that is needs to be able to walk in the locker room and leave Jerry behind. And I think Jerry should empower that and embrace that.
But does Jerry know that he's part of the problem, Steve? That's part of the problem, because you have to read the room.
But Dan, I've been telling – look, he obviously doesn't listen to me, because I've been saying it for 20 years. So, like
– Yeah, but you don't tell him this when you see him in person when you're in –
Yeah, no, I have intimated some of this to him when I see him.
Like, Jerry, okay, hold on. I'm Jerry Jones, and I say, hey, Steve, how are you? How are you doing?
Well, Jerry, you've got to get a coach that's empowered, that walks in the locker room and not afraid. You know, and he's like, yeah.
That's not intimating. That's telling him.
I've mentioned it a number of times.
Hall of Famer Steve Young joining us on the program. How did the Niners not make it to the Super Bowl?
You saw them get beat by the Ravens, and the a bully defense, the Cleveland Browns did that, And they also saw them get beat by the Bengals with Joe Burrow just throwing it all over the field. And there's those are the two things, you know, you have, and who's got a defense that's got that bully defense in the NFC today? I know they're going to probably see the Lions and the Packers. I don't know that either on the road it can do that. Who can throw it around? Can Jordan Love repeat this? Can he be the new Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson? You know, can he be that guy? Because if he can, he can throw it all over the field. There is some weakness in the secondary that shows up, and, you know, they can get beat. And it's been proven that way. I don't think either defense in the NFC can be the bullies that could slow them down. You got to be honest. It's pretty unlikely that the 49ers get beat.
Who do you think is the best quarterback of all time?
I sit in the bar stool and, you know, I'm going to get in a fight over this stupid stuff. Look, Tom Brady has 7 Super Bowls. Joe had 4. I mean, you just, when he had his 7th Super Bowl, you're like, no one's going to ever. And no one says there's going to be another person that wins 7 Super Bowls. You never say never, but I say never. No one will ever win 7 Super Bowls. And so to me, we tend to just say that. Whoever has the most Super Bowls is the greatest of all time. And that's fine. You can have all kinds of arguments about it and scream and yell. But until somebody wins another 6 or 7 Super Bowls, you know, Tom Brady, I mean, it just has to be that way.
Okay, but do you truly believe that should be the bottom line if you're going to find...
It never is.
But
never,
Steve, we don't hold other positional players to that.
Yeah, it's contextual, of course. But that's... Dan, now you're going to be... I'm upset that's the parameters that we're going to make the judgment on. So I want to change the way that's done. Well, good luck. You're going to be run over. Like, okay, let's look at... contextually around the players that had more comebacks, fourth quarter comebacks. But then, if you have a lot of fourth quarter comebacks, what are you doing behind? Well, who had the most? You'll run out of space. I think in the end, football's a team game, so quarterback's the ultimate player on the team game, and so the ultimate thing to do is to go to the Super Bowl on the team game, and the quarterback who does it the most. I mean, I think that's probably why it wins, Dan, because it's the one that there's a lot of other ways to cut it, but in the end, you know, championships have a way of like calming the water.
Will somebody be recognized as a better receiver than Jerry Rice in our lifetime?
No, I think he just relentlessly you can't match the numbers. People have tried. Even in today's, what's crazy is the game's changed so much. It's so much more wide open. You're seeing efficiency records in the 118s, 120s. You're seeing yardage, touchdowns. You know, if you look at error adjusted, you know, you think that Jerry Rice would easily be covered by now, right? Come on. I mean, 20, 30 years later, you're still looking up like pretty dramatically at Jerry Rice. Then you ask yourself, because even if you're going to be era-adjusted and still be dominant, and even un-era-adjusted still be dominant, you're going to dominate for a long time.
When you watch the game now with your kids, like, do you ever go, how did I play that game? Like, how did I survive?
I've done that on Monday nights when we're on the sideline, and some teams are particularly kind of bully looking, I watch the first quarter a lot from the sidelines, and I'll be with a buddy or something. He's like, oh, "You freaking played this?" I played this. I played this. It wasn't just patty cake, man. This is a whole. He goes, "You're kidding me!" Like, you got freaking rocked. Man, you're not going to – so, yeah, I do – time goes on and you think about the game. But I still – the problem with me, Dan, is I see the game today and I see the players that are thriving in this game today. The guys – my guys that played like I played. And you see how they treat the quarterback, and you see all the open spaces in the flats are never open. The middle of the field is unpatrolled, and you're like – please let me play again. Please let me play in this time. And I really mean that. Like, I would love so desperately to play today. It would be so much fun. I mean, I never thought football is necessarily fun, I thought it rewarding and challenging and like engaging, but I never thought of it as like fun. And I, for whatever reason, today's game to me is like, oh, so much fun. I just want to play.
Who's the former teammate of yours who should be a Hall of Famer?
Well, there's two. There's probably Roger Craig and Brent Jones.
Okay.
And I think you'd argue for Harris Barton. Like, all we talk about 20 years of, you know, dominance. 18 playoff appearances in a row, or 19 playoff appearances in a row, five Super Bowls and what, 12 championship games, 13 championship games. I mean, it was Patriot like. And so the guys that led that and did that, you're forgetting a couple or three. Inevitably that happens, but that's how I would line it up.
Do you have anything cool in your office? Is that your actual office where you are?
Look, when I got married, my wife says, "Hey, look, there's only one quarterback in the family. That's me." And I'm like, oh, wait, what are you talking about? You see this ring?
Steve, the other quarterback bought the house.
You see my ring? I got my rings here. I've lived for a few decades, rat recognizing at a home. This is not my office. This is my wife's office. I have a little corner that I'm using. I'm before the office hours. And so I get to sit here for a while.
What happened to you?
I can tell you one thing. Offensive line sucks. I can tell you that. Because that's what I'm playing now.
Great to talk to you. Thank you. Thanks for sharing, Steve.
You're the best.
That's Steve Young, Hall of Famer. Man, that's tough. There's one quarterback, and it ain't Steve. Honey, get out of my office. All right? I told you you got 15 minutes in there.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
And if
all right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces, like there was the hat, there was the shoe.
Oh, same.
There was the, I was always a battleship guy or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow, you know, I mean, even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise, set several generations after the last installment, in which apes are the dominant species. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike and embark on a journey that will redefine the planet. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Sound the trumpets. It's horse racing time, so saddle up for all the action with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. Right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250. Just deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Wager on your favorite horses, then watch the races live right there on the app. Download the DK Horse app now. New customers get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when they opt in with the code DP. Only on the DK Horse app.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus, 21 plus in certain states to open or access an account and a resident of a state where DK Horse is available. Eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. One per new customer. Match calculated on first deposit up to a maximum of $250. Deposit requires two-time playthrough of settled wagers within 168 hours. Bonus released in $25 increments. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. See terms at dkhorse.com.
Well, Super Bowl odds, DraftKings has the Niners, the big favorites, followed by the Ravens, Bills, Chiefs, and then the Lions. And then the long odds are the Buccaneers, the Packers, and the Texans. We'll get to more phone calls coming up. He's Reggie Bush, just inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame during the National Football Foundation dinner in Las Vegas last month. And Reggie joining us on the program. Before we get to Reggie, let's play the Reggie Bush game, the favorite NFL team he had when he was growing up. Todd, I'll start with you.
I'm going to say the Raiders.
Okay. Seton.
Man, Raiders is a good guess.
I know, I agree.
I'm going to say the Raiders.
All right. Marvin?
I'm going to say the Chargers.
Okay. All right. Local team. All right. Paulie?
It's got to be the Chargers.
I'm going to go Raiders. Let's bring in Reggie Bush to play the Reggie Bush game. Your favorite team growing up was?
It was the Chargers, man. San Diego Chargers.
Okay. Who was your favorite running back growing up?
Barry Sanders. He was a guy that I wanted to emulate my game after. He's a guy that I fell in love with. He is a guy that really, like, I felt like introduced me to the game of football. He was the first person that really just captivated me when I watched him on the screen.
But is that something you can learn, the way Barry ran?
Yeah, it is. I think if you know, obviously it takes a lot of hard work, dedication. But, you know, the way that Barry moved, to me, it was just, it was pure artwork, you know, and it was, you know, there was a lot of, you know, built-in instincts as well into it. And a lot of that plays into your vision. And so, you know, I think there are different drills and things that you can work on with young kids as far as working on their vision, how to use your peripheral vision, how to see things, how to set things up. And then you have to work on the quick feet as well. And so I think there is, you know, that you can get to, you know, the level of what, you know, Barry Sanders was. It's obviously going to take a lot of hard work, dedication, and there's only one true Barry. But, yeah, you can definitely get there.
What was it like when you met him?
Oh, man, it was full circle moment for me. You know, he's such a humble guy. And I think I remember meeting him I wasn't even drafted yet. I was actually about to get drafted and I was in Detroit. Remember when the Super Bowl was in Detroit? And I was out there for the Super Bowl. So, and that's when I met Barry Sanders for the first time. And I was overwhelmed. It was a full circle moment. I couldn't believe I was meeting my idol, the guy that I just always wanted to pattern my game after. And he was so humble, you know, and a lot of times people talk about when you meet your heroes, you know, they don't always live up to that. Barry, Barry lived up to it.
How big of celebrities were you guys at USC in that moment?
I would say we were very big. When you look at we can talk about just the sidelines alone, right? Every celebrity, you know, would come out to our games. Snoop Dogg was always there. Will Ferrell was there. Shaq was there sometimes. You know, and it was awesome, man. We were on that football field, in that stadium, you know, we felt like gladiators. And, you know, that was the arena that, you know, we loved to compete in. And every game was sold out, you know, 95, 96,000 people.
What's the most surreal moment you had when you played there?
I had a lot of them. I had a lot of them. It's hard to choose one because there were a lot of games that I look back on that I can't believe it happened. You know, I think one that sticks out is the Notre Dame game we played in Notre Dame. You know, winning that game in the last second, you know, with what is being dubbed as the Bush Push. But, you know, it was awesome to go through that experience, you know, with my brothers, with my teammates, with the coaches, you know, playing for the fans. And then also at home, you know, I think some of my memorable games were playing against UCLA. Because that was always our last game of the season. It was always a crosstown rivalry, and we always wanted to make sure that we saved a little bit up just for UCLA so that we always have bragging rights that we owned LA, you know. So many memories, you know, when I think about my time at USC, and I'm just so appreciative that I stopped through there.
Well, I didn't know if the NFL was a letdown after playing at USC.
I'll tell you what, when I got to
but fame-wise, New Orleans, fame-wise, you were more famous in college than you were in the NFL.
Well, I'll say this. When I got to New Orleans, there was an explosion, you know, of just the fan base welcoming me with open arms, because you got to also remember this is 6 months after 5 months after Hurricane Katrina. And so me coming to the city of New Orleans was a very big deal because, one, the team hadn't been good in years. Mm. And if you remember, they were called the Aints. You know, people will refer to them as the Aints, and fans would show up to the games with paper bags over their heads. And the team, you know, I believe they had lost every game the year before. So, you know, me coming to New Orleans was a very big deal. And it was one of my favorite moments. You talk about a surreal moment. That was a surreal moment, me going to New Orleans, because I was supposed to be the number one draft pick. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mario Williams. Mario Williams ended up being the number one draft pick. I actually found out the same way everybody else found out. I found out on SportsCenter.
Was it because he was signable? Like that was the report at the time.
No. You want to know the truth?
Yeah.
The truth is with Charlie Casserly. And, you know, he hasn't talked about it. You know, we've actually had an opportunity to discuss it when I was working for NFL Network, because one of the executives found out the truth. And I hadn't even known the truth yet about why I didn't go to Houston. And apparently it was because they hired a private investigator to investigate me during the Heisman Trophy debacle that was happening at that time. An investigator came back and said that I was a bad guy, had bad character, I was a street kid, and that they shouldn't sign me, they shouldn't draft me. And so this is a story I'm getting from one of the executives at NFL Network. And so, you know, they wanted to do this one-on-one with me and Charlie Casserly and just kind of talk about it. And at first, Casserly said, yeah, and then he ended up backing out because, you know, I think he understood it probably, you know, wasn't going to look great for him. So, you know.
So Charlie was the longtime GM of the then Washington Redskins. Then he became a GM of the Texans. So they had the chance to take you number one. We're talking to Reggie Bush. How will you sum up your college career talking to your kids?
Awesome. Amazing. One of my favorite stops. College is the place where I learned so much about myself. I became a man. I had to overcome things. I had to compete. I had to, you know, compete for the role that I ended up, you know, immersing myself in as, you know, starting running back and punt returner and catching the ball out of the backfield and all those different things. And so I had to work to get there. And I was also surrounded by amazing talent. I was also surrounded by great coaching. And, you know, that's one of the things that also helped elevate my game as well, is every time we stepped on that practice field, we felt like it was – you know, it was the competition level was always at its highest. It was just straight competition. You know what I'm saying? And from the time that the whistle was blown, we always started practice with 9-on-7. I hated 9-on-7 because it was like the defense was, you're not throwing the football 9-on-7, you know, practice period. It's just a run period. It's the run. You're literally only running the ball and the defense knows you can't throw it, you know? And so, every linebacker is sprinting full speed downhill as soon as a ball is hiked in. It's like running into a brick wall. But that's what we did to get our practices started during the week, you know, as we prepared for Notre Dame, as we prepared for UCLA. And as much as we hated it, it also made us stronger. And it also helped us to develop the chemistry and the bond that we needed so that we can go and win some of these tough games.
Reggie inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame during the National Football Foundation dinner in Las Vegas last month. I agree with your point about Nick Saban, if you'll paraphrase that for the audience, that the reason why you think, or at least one of the reasons why Nick Saban is stepping down is because?
It's because of NIL. And if anybody's been paying attention and if they've been listening to Nick Saban's you know, speeches or interviews that he's been doing, some of these different conferences, and I don't know where he's at when he's, you know, speaking to, you know, some of these people, but there was a point to where he was complaining about other universities paying players. He was complaining about Jimbo Fisher paying players. He complained about Deion Sanders supposedly paying, you know, five-star players. And it was, you know, I honestly felt like at one point I didn't understand it, because on one side you're looking at, this is supposed to be one of the greatest coaches ever in the history of college football, and here he is complaining after he just won 5-6 national championships. You know, so I didn't understand that mindset of, what are you complaining about? You're at the top. You are the pinnacle. People want to be you. And yet here you are complaining because the playing field is now starting to level itself out. And that's what people have to understand with NIL. That's what's happening. There's a movement that's happening, and the movement is, the power is going back into the hands of the players. And that's something that has never existed in college football or collegiate sports, because it's been built off of amateurism, right? And we know that it's not true. It's not truly amateurism, because there's big money. This is big money business when we talk about college football and when we talk about college basketball. It's big money. It's a big business.
Is Deion Sanders, what he's doing at Colorado, sustainable?
What do you mean? Like, what part of is it sustainable? Because right now, winning, you know, 5-6 games a year, I think is sustainable. You know, I think if you're talking about winning a national championship, that's a much tougher subject and question, because they just got to start getting better recruits. They got to start getting 5-star players. And at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. You know, you can find, you know, here and there sometimes some 3-star guys, maybe a 2-star guy here and there, and turn them into a 4-star, you know, player. But at the end of the day, you know, to be able to win and to stay on the top, you need to be able to get those 5-star recruits. You got to be able to get those 5-star players. And so he has that position. He has the most important question answered, which is the quarterback position right now with his son. After that, you know, he's got to go find some guys, you know, after his son leaves. Because I think after this year, his son's probably going to be gone. But he's got to start getting better, you know, better players. And that's, you know, that's where it's tough, because at the end of the day, now you look at the Pac-12 is gone. I apologize. I don't even know where's Colorado going now? What conference are they going to?
They're in the Big 12.
They're going into the Big 12. So,
isn't that crazy that, you know, we have no idea where, like, Texas and Oklahoma are going to the SEC?
I know where they're going.
And you called it the Pac-10 or the Pac-12, and now it's the Pac-2. And, like, this is crazy.
It's crazy.
It's disappointing. It really is that the grown-ups have allowed this to happen.
Well, you know, it's, again, this goes back to the structure of college football and how it operates. And the narrative that the NCAA has been able to create with the amateurism word, and being able to really deceive, I think, people into believing that it truly is amateurism, because it's truly not amateurism. Again, like I said, it's big money business, and the players are the workhorses. And for so long, the players did not have power, up until most recently, until the NCAA was forced by the Supreme Court with the ruling of 9-0 to allow players to monetize off of the thing that they owned from the time that they were born, which is their name, image, and likeness.
You filed a defamation lawsuit against the NCAA. Was that in August?
Yeah.
Explain to me what you're hoping to get out of that.
Listen, the NCAA made a statement about me. That was a lie. They said I was paid to play, and that was never part of the original investigation, alleging that I was paid to play. And so if it's a lie, then it's a lie. And for so long, the NCAA has been able to get away with the narrative that I was paid to play. That's why it's ironic that the narrative that I was paid to play was first circulated and started by the very people who released a statement about me, officially, you know, stating that I was paid to play. And so that's what the lawsuit is over. That's what a defamation of lawsuit ultimately is about. Is about when, you know, someone says something about you that's not true, especially if it's public, especially if it's released, you know, to you know, numerous media outlets, you know, that pick up on it. And it's also, you know, listed as a reason as why I'm not being reinstated, or a reason as why, you know, I'm not getting my Heisman Trophy back. And that's a lie.
But what if again, they, like I said, what if they said, drop your lawsuit, we'll restore your collegiate records as a settlement?
It's too late. It's too, we way past that. Okay. We passed the.
But if they restore your records, then you get the Heisman.
They're going to have to do that anyway. That's going to happen anyway. All that's going to happen anyway, because again, if, I don't know if you heard what I said, a lie is a lie, right? And so if it's a lie, then it's going to be exposed, right? We'll find out in this lawsuit. You know what I'm saying? We'll find out who's really telling the truth. And that's what's the most amazing part about it is we've never been able to do this for so long. I haven't been able to do this, which is, you know, file this lawsuit against the NCAA until they made that statement, you know? And so that's, again, that's what you guys are seeing now for the first time. You're seeing my story, my case being tried in an official way, you know, in the court of law, which is something that the NCAA has never had to do. They never had to prove their case in the court of law.
Great to talk to you. Congratulations going into the College Football Hall of Fame. Good luck with the lawsuit. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate you, Dan.
That's Reggie Bush joining us on the program. He won the Heisman in 2005. Well, it's interesting with the defamation lawsuit. And that's, as he said, we're past that, where, hey, drop the lawsuit, we'll restore your records, and then the Heisman will then recognize you, and then they will give you your Heisman. At least that's what we've been told. Yeah, Pauline.
Right. The Heisman Trophy Trust that took away Reggie Bush's Heisman and the honor and the award they took away, you know, they did that because they chose to follow suit with the NCAA's eligibility rules. It's very much like the Pete Rose situation. The Heisman has a separate set of rules.
Just like the Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame does.
Correct.
They don't have to abide by baseball, but they normally do.
Correct. The Heisman Trust chose to do it with Reggie Bush. And if somehow his records were restored, they would be almost obligated to give him back.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.